podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today, a Triad production. I'm Dr. Graham Taylor. Our guest today writes, "When I was in graduate school, it was all about what trauma book do I need to read or what workshop do I need to attend that was going to help me be the best trauma therapist I could be. Both of which are crucial, but what I missed was how much I mattered in the therapeutic process. And by that, I mean how much my self-awareness mattered and how integral my own authenticity and presence mattered to doing this work. In my years doing therapy and teaching and training myself, I couldn't agree more with this. As a therapist, we are our own greatest tool. And along with the knowledge of psychology, we ourselves are the cornerstone of that healing process that our guest talks about in that quote. But how does one come about becoming their own best tool? And what personal components go into the cultivation of this therapeutic self? And what does this inner work actually look like? These questions and professional development are particularly relevant for those of you listening onto today's podcast that are early career practitioners. Cultivating clarity about your why in coming into this field, identifying your strengths, and doing your own inner work such that you can bring authenticity, presence, and courage to your therapy will allow you to establish a foundation from which a very rewarding practice can be experienced. Our guest today has interviewed over 300 thought leaders in trauma treatment, yoga, addiction, and mindfulness, working to answer these very questions. I'm so excited to be with him. Back with us today is Dr. Guy McPherson. Guy holds his doctorate in clinical psychology and has spent the last several years studying the impact and treatment of trauma and early psychosis. In 2014, he founded the Trauma Therapist Project with the goals of raising the awareness of trauma and creating an educational and supportive community for new trauma workers. The Trauma Therapist Project has now grown to include the Trauma Therapist Podcast, now being listened to, check this out, in 160 countries around the world and downloaded more than 100,000 times per month, as well as a Trauma Therapist 2.0, which is an online membership community specifically dedicated to educating and inspiring trauma workers just starting out on their trauma-informed journey. He's also one of the coolest guys you ever meet. Guy, welcome to our show today.
Brother, nice to have you here.
Thanks. Well, I'm going to do what my guests do and go back and correct some of the numbers. So it's been over 500 guests right now.
Oh, thank you.
And the podcast is now downloaded over 130,000 times per month.
Awesome.
But look, you started out with that quote that I was like, oh man, you're going for the heart of it. And this topic is close to my heart because it's where I, in a sense, screwed up. I got it all wrong. You know, when I went back to graduate school and I said I wanted to, you know, get my doctorate in clinical psychology, I was 36. I had been in therapy and loved it and got a lot out of it and thought that I had that figured out. I got that. I did that. I don't need to work on myself. And so just like you read, you know, I went in there wanting to focus on trauma, not really understanding fully why. And I think that's important. And as a result, I was like, okay, what information do I need to shove in my head, in my being, that's going to help me become the best trauma therapist I could become? Now, you know, a lot of that makes a lot of sense and can be justified. But as you said, it's not the whole, I did not realize the role that I was, how much it mattered for me to be a human being in the room with a client. I figured, I got this degree. I have this information. And, you know, as I want to say at the outset, look, you've got to know what you're talking about. Knowledge is crucial. You know, you have to have read the books and have that information. Yeah. But I did not understand the significance and the value of, as one of my guests said, you know, uncovering human beingness, being in the moment, being Guy. And granted, that comes with, you know, with ethics and boundaries and all that stuff.
Yeah. I love this idea of just being a human being ourselves as we come into relationship. And I want to take a deep dive into this. How does one become their most, I think, words you've used in our conversations, authentic, genuine self? And those are words, like you talked about before the show today, the words that we toss around, and we want to kind of unpack and maybe even try and operationalize those a wee bit. Adam Smith said, the first thing you have to know is yourself. A man who knows himself can step outside of himself and watch his own reactions like an observer. And a guy named Rama Maharshi said, your own self-realization is the greatest service you can render the world. This is really what you're saying right here, being our most human being self. And this is what your passion is around. And after all this time, why do you see this being so important or essential to do this inner work?
Well, I think it comes down to, I think it's essential to working with others, being in relationship with others, being able to, you know, be oneself is, it's almost magical. I mean, we as human beings are drawn to people who are in the moment, who are themselves, yeah, who are doing their life's work. You know, I just dropped off my daughter at her school. She goes to this farm school, and the woman who runs it, she's amazing. And I was, as I was walking back through this farm, I'm thinking to myself, what is it about this woman? And you know what it is? It's, she's in her element. And I was not like that when I first started, because I think, Graham, you know, you're asking a question, but there are kind of antecedents to that. I think, you know, for me, it was understanding what drew me and pulled me to the work, to trauma work. And that was my own trauma. You know, that was being bullied when I was a young kid and not really understanding the degree to which it not only impacted me and affected me and jacked up the trajectory of my life in terms of my self-esteem and how I showed up in relationships, but it also early on filtered how I responded when I was working with clients. Yeah. And the interventions and the techniques that I was focusing on in the moment. And when I got to a point where I, as you referenced, you know, kind of developed and kind of opened up my own and improved my own self-awareness, I was able to let go of that. And, you know, as we're talking about here, drop the need or the feeling that I needed to maybe to respond in a certain way and just allowed kind of things to breathe and to open up and for the client's own healing process to happen.
Yeah, I really like that. It's a good question, isn't it, you're raising. If someone's doing trauma work, what's drawing you to it? What is the why behind that draw? And I think a lot of times you're right, it can be our own trauma. And it's important to know that. We'll talk about maybe that in a little bit as well. If I'm being drawn to this, it's even more because of my own trauma. It's even more important that I do my own work around my own trauma. So I'm not doing my work when I'm sitting with somebody.
Exactly.
I'm letting it to be their work. But I also find that in my own experience, trauma work, it's when it's most real. Things are most raw. There is nothing in that moment other than the moment that we're in that moment, talking about whatever the content is or the emotion it is or wherever we're stuck or whatever we're feeling in its greatest intensity. What are some of the things that you find kind of being a draw to the trauma work itself? And it just maybe into some of the things I talked about right there.
Well, I mean, I think it even goes beyond the draw to trauma work. I think it you can say people have to be aware of what has drawn them into this field, into the helping field, into therapy. Right. Because I think one has to really understand that. And one has to define what it means to help. Well, I want to help someone. You know, I got into the field because I wanted to help people. I felt like I could walk, step into that fire zone with them, you know, the trauma zone, and help them. Okay, well, what does it mean to help and to fix and to take away someone's pain? And when I went into a therapeutic relationship like that, it becomes about, it can, and it oftentimes does become about you. Right. And, you know, well, I need to fix that. I need to take away that pain. I need to have someone brought up bullying. I was like, became an advocate. Yeah. And as someone said to me, one of my guests said to me, How dare you think or feel that your job is to take away someone's pain, you know? Yeah. And someone else said to me, that person's healing process, your healing journey started months, possibly years before they walked into your office, you know? So it's being able to relinquish this idea that you or one or myself, you know, when I was seeing clients as a therapist, can fix things, can change things. But what can you do? I think one of the greatest things you can do is to be present and be yourself and be in the moment. And that involves having explored my own trauma and understanding what triggers are going to come up, will eventually come up in session, and being able to monitor them and deal with them and interact with them while I'm with this other person. That is where the art comes in. And that is, I think, where the daringness comes in on the part of the therapist, and the courageous part comes in. I'm not even talking about the courage that the client, you know, shows and so forth, but it does mean that you have to be able to show up and realize that you don't have all the answers.
So you're saying in that guy right there that the help and the best fix built upon the theories and the knowledge of trauma and all the theoretical approaches, all important, all essential to ground ourselves in those things. But you're saying then the transcendent piece is that the fix and the help, it's being with the person in their process, not one that we are driving, or but joining them that in our fullest, most genuine, courageous way on our part, and being there and not pushing, not pulling, but being right alongside as they kind of walk us through where they need to go, and trusting that process.
Right.
Go take it from there. But to do that.
Right. To you know, good luck.
That's a big ask.
To get there takes work. It's not easy. Why is it not easy? Because a lot of us who get into this field feel that because they want to help, they want to fix, they want to cure, they want to take away the pain. Wait a minute. You're asking me, I got to look at myself. I've got to work on myself. Wait a minute. I want to help this person. I want to heal this person. What does this have to do with me? Granted, not everyone approaches it like that, but a lot of people do. And you know, it requires the therapist looking at, being willing to look at and own, you know, the peaks and valleys of their life, of their history, which oftentimes can include trauma. If you look at it, trauma on a continuum, you know, huge, crazy traumas and little minor traumas, some of which many people would put bullying under that. But getting to that point takes self-awareness. It takes work. It takes daily work. You know, for me, it happened over a series of years. And I think I may have shared this one experience when I was working up in a clinic in Northern California. I was at a graduate school for a few years. I had my degree, my doctorate. You know, I, you know, was a psychologist, and I felt like if I didn't have the answer, I needed to have the answer, you know, and oftentimes I would, you know, do my due diligence and study my books and right before I was seeing a session. So I had a plan going in and oftentimes, you know, it's ridiculous. It doesn't work, which is not to say that knowledge, you have to have that knowledge.
Got to have that in your back pocket.
You've got to have that
available. Yes,
but I was clutching to that, you know, briefcase filled with knowledge and books as I walked into that meeting, you know, and I was reliant on that. Yeah. Now, there's a reason for that. And that's part of cultivating that self-awareness of, you know, the things that we have to work on. And I needed to kind of allow that to dissolve in a sense, and to trust that I myself, you know, my human beingness was enough, not the degree or not being called by a specific title. And that was a big shift for me. And it really helped me kind of become alive and in the moment when I was with clients, because clients oftentimes, I mean, especially oftentimes people who've been impacted by trauma, you know, their trust has been wrenched from them. Vulnerability has been wrenched from them. Honesty has been wrenched from them. And to be able to be in the moment with a therapist who's able to do that is a huge part of the healing foundation.
You know, what you're reframing for us here is that with every trauma, there is an attachment disruption, always. Right. There's some kind of rupture in the attachment with trauma. And what you're saying here is the importance of the knowledge-based theories and the things that can help people through their trauma are best brought in, best needed, if you will, kind of like a dough idea, kind of best needed into the therapy when the relational part is there and that relational attachment is being worked on, trusting that the thing they need most is a relationship to join them in their work. This trauma, so many people, as you know, I see it, they're so alone in their trauma. Right. It's so tormenting to be alone, and we're asking them to invite us in, which we are excited to do, but them asking us to be invited in, that's a huge request on their part, because it's usually the relationships that have somehow betrayed them or hurt them, and where the trust, you know, challenges really emerge and originate. And you're saying if we can kind of reframe holding off on the therapies and techniques, necessary and good, and you got to be good in the books. But you're saying if you can trust that process relationally, you can weave those things in artfully, and that's where they're going to be most effective, the relational piece first.
Yeah, I think so. The challenging part, at least for me, the challenging part was feeling that I myself was not only worthwhile, but as you referenced earlier, part of the healing process. For me, it was this other thing, this knowledge, you know, page 222 of Bessel van der Kolk's book, that was going to work for this client. In fact, it probably is going to work for every client,
right.
You know, but it's the owning, I feel, owning of our self, our being, our experiences. To me, this is really important, because what it means is, and I think this is the exciting part, that each therapist out there, you know, has their own unique abilities, their own differences, and their own kind of bumps and crags, and as I said before, you know, peaks and valleys that they can bring in their own beingness to the therapy process, and create this relationship.
Yeah,
to me, that is magic.
Yeah, I agree. So we're talking about some of the components that maybe go into that before we can do the between work, doing that within work first. That's your greatest point of advocacy here around this. So we're talking about some of those personal and relational qualities. You've talked about qualities like presence and authenticity, vulnerability, being in the moment. Let's unpack those a wee bit. What do those actually mean? So we're just not tossing around some esoteric terms. Right. What do you know these to be from right. all of your work thus far
right.
that
right.
allows the art to be possible?
Right. I think, you know, authenticity is one of those words, you know, that kept coming up again and again and again in the interviews that I was doing. And I was like, what does that mean? How do you get there?
Yeah.
And for me, it means, you know, being genuine, being able to be yourself, not someone else, not what you think a therapist should be like or a psychologist should be like. And that's what I mistakenly thought when I was starting out, that I needed to be a certain way and act a certain way and have all the answers. And to flip that on its end, in a sense, it's almost, for me, it was the antithesis of that. And being able to trust in myself that I was enough, to be genuine in the moment, means, for me, it meant not having all the answers, being able to say I didn't have all the answers, being able to be in the moment in terms of how, you know, the process is impacting me. And again, a lot of therapists are going to have different takes on this, you know, how much self-disclosure they're willing to, you know, partake in.
Yeah.
Granted, but that has to be decided by yourself, you know.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Continuing education is both a requirement and a learning opportunity, but finding the right CE provider can be challenging. AATBS, a triad company, offers continuing education for psychologists, social workers, marriage and family therapists, counselors, and behavior analysts. CE courses are available both individually and as part of our new All Access Pass. All Access Pass provides a library of over 250 unique courses. That's more than 800 hours of CEs, with new courses being added every month. As a special offer, Behavioral Health Today listeners can save 15% on CE purchases. Visit us at aatbs.com/BHT and enter promo code BHT15 during checkout. That's aatbs.com/BHT. Check out our library and check off your CE requirements today.
Guy, what you're saying, a couple of things in there. I want to grab onto this idea of being yourself in the moment and this idea that I am enough. Those are powerful things. I'm going to ask you, can you think of a time, because I got one in my head that pops up, but I'd love to hear yours. Can you think of a time where you've been in a moment or were in a moment or I've heard of people being in a moment where their most authentic self might have come out in that moment with a patient and maybe something as a therapist they said? Anything come to mind?
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, it really centered around, I remember I was working in this clinic and we were working with young individuals who were showing early signs of psychosis. And we had to do this monster. We had to deliver this monster of a kind of test in a sense, or inquiry in a sense. It was literally 30 pages long. So we're sitting down, working with pairs. I was working with a colleague of mine, and I was leading this particular assessment. And this young kid is sitting across from us. I think it was 16, 17 years old. Yeah. And, you know, I was asking these questions and and it wasn't working. And I was doing my best and it wasn't working. And it was at a point, Graham, in my training and my evolution as a therapist, where I was just like, this is ridiculous. And I took the assessment. I just put it down. And I said, all right, look, this is obviously not working. So I kind of went off book in a sense. And I was like, this is not working. Let's call him Jeremy. Jeremy, look, let's forget this. Let me ask you a question, okay? And this, I was kind of in my New York way, you know, what is going on? What do all the people out there, what are they not getting that they need to get? What are they not hearing that they need to hear? Tell me. And that was magical in that moment for that client, because here he was seeing a person, hello, a human being who put down this assessment that you could imagine what that probably represented to this kid, and just being able to interact on a human being level. And for me, it just lifted a weight off of my shoulders, because it allowed me to really see that, wait a minute, you know, I could take this cloak off and be who I am.
Now, and what did you have to do or trust to be able to take that cloak off,
right,
to give Jeremy that experience that he most likely needed? What did you have to do to take the cloak off?
Right. Well, a couple of things. I had a, you know, trust in myself, that I had a trust in the ability that I could connect with people, that I wanted to connect with this young kid. And I can connect and relate to people. Why am I having a friggin' hard time with this assessment standing in between us? But I was clinging to that because I felt that, you know, this kind of represented a certain acumen or a certain knowledge base that I needed validation from.
Yeah, really.
And I let that go. And really, it was a huge opening for me, because it allowed me to trust in myself, in the process, in this kid who obviously knew what was going on, but I was clinging to this specific way to try to wrench all this information from him.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm going to, in that ticking off that cloak, it's a kind of a nice visual, actually. In that, it goes back to the other part I wanted to tap on that you said of, I've got to trust that I'm enough.
Right.
I've got this whole bag of knowledge, but I got to trust that I'm enough, that relationally, I'm going to be with this young man and we're going to do something together just by being as human in this moment. You know, when I first came in to the field, I thought I had to have kind of very, very relational, but almost kind of a stoic holding of some of the hard times, you know, and trying to maintain a little bit of a distance because they're having a hard time holding it. I couldn't show that I might be having a hard time holding it. And move to a place where, in kind of taking off my cloak, just being able to say, you know what, we are really stuck right now. It is a really hard place, and there's nowhere we can go but other than just kind of be right here, isn't it? We're stuck. Right. There's something that kind of shifts in that moment of validating and normalizing that we're stuck, and it's okay. People come to therapy thinking that they've got to make progress in order for things to be, you know, they're a good patient or things move forward. Sometimes progress is being stuck. Or I remember times when, you know, I've been so touched by something, I couldn't speak. And you sit and you hold that place. But what it does, it mirrors for them the place that they struggle to hold.
Right.
And you mirror that part and you hold it together and something shifts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Subtly.
It's honoring, nuanced. Honoring the human process, you know, and it's not like I was doing consciously and unconsciously is kind of the antithesis of that was kind of fabricating this therapeutic process instead of honoring the human process, which happens moment by moment by moment by moment.
Right.
And granted, you know, this is going to look differently with different clients. Some client might have not have appreciated me doing that, but that's where, you know, you have to have the experience and you have to be able to gauge that. But to me, you know, there's nothing more exciting in this because it's, you know, like I said, the human beingness of it, we are drawn to it. You know, we find it so raw and I think elemental, and it's something that we don't get enough of in our daily lives.
Yes. You know, it's the most real we can possibly be,
right?
You know, and taking that just for a second around that and kind of tying in this idea, the art of the therapy, the idea of being able to know that I am enough to be in that moment. You're talking in all of that. That's where this, you talk about this creativity and the spontaneity, get a chance to become just this organic part of the process. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. Yeah. It's about being able to, like I said, you know, when I was starting out, I had a briefcase, this kind of metaphorical briefcase filled with knowledge and plans and, you know, homework I had done on a particular client that I was going to implement the next session.
Right.
And it was allowing for anything but creativity and spontaneity. And those elements in particular require a certain amount of daring on the part of the therapist because you don't know what the heck is going to happen.
Yes.
But it's about trust. It's about trusting in the unfolding of the healing journey.
Yeah.
You know, what could I possibly do that's going to completely fracture this therapeutic relationship? You know, when I was starting out, there were a lot of things I could theoretically do. But when I got to a point where I did release that cloak, it was about being in the moment and being trustful in the moment and honoring that process. And there was a fear had kind of dissolved, you know, and I think that type of courage, maybe is a strong word, but daring, but honoring of the creative process takes a willingness to not know and to not have the answers and to trust in, you know, not just your body of knowledge, but what the client is bringing to the table in a sense.
You know, you think about things developmentally, our humanistic colleagues would say there's a teleological potential here, a process to kind of right oneself, the self-heal, the potential lies therein. You know, how do we develop in the most healthy way? We have the healthiest relationships in our lives, ideally our parents, caregivers. And what we're talking about is relationships in someone's lives have gone awry. They've had ruptures and attachments, and the person themselves have done the best they can to kind of compensate for that and to manage that, but it still creates dysfunction in their lives unintentionally, but because of the pain that they're rooted in. And you're talking about if we can kind come into relationship with these. We get to provide almost like a womb-like environment in the healthiest possible relationship for them to theologically begin to self-heal. We don't have to tell the infant in the womb to, hey, you got to do this at this stage, and this stage. It happens automatically by the environment and the relationship that they are in. Same with our development. Yeah. Things naturally progress from developmental milestones to developmental tasks. And you're saying the same thing can happen here as we join people in their healing process,
right?
Trust it and let it unfold kind of in that organic way. I love that. So you're again saying in order to come into a relationship like that, that inner work, I want to talk about the daring and the courage about doing so. Nietzsche said, one's own self is well hidden from one's own self. Mm. And Ben Franklin said, there are three things that are extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know oneself. So you're talking about the entry into this kind of relationship that you're so encouraging. It's hard work and it's not easy work. Talk about that process and some of the challenge and courage and daring that it takes.
Right. And especially within the context of therapy, because it in a way challenges this very notion that, you know, the therapeutic relationship inherently is imbalanced.
You know,
client walks in and I'm coming into a therapist's office.
Yeah.
I'm coming to be healed. You're going to heal me.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, writing again, that process can just that shifting that balance in and of itself can be kind of an earth shattering event. Wait a minute. You know, the client, wait a minute, you're a person, you're feeling, you're expressing emotion. You're not perfect. And this drawing into and creating this relationship of two human beings is magical. But to get to a point, I think, where a therapist is willing to look at their own experiences, their own traumas, if I can use that as an example,
yes,
and to be able to explore them and to understand how those instances or instance in a sense has impacted them, that takes a willingness that isn't easy, because you're admitting, look, when I first started when I got into graduate school, I knew I had been bullied. I didn't realize that was one of the things that was propelling me.
Yeah.
When I started my job and I started doing the podcast, I still didn't realize the degree to which it was affecting me and impacting me and influencing me. And it took me a while to get to a point where I could even talk about it like this. But when that happened, there was nothing in a sense that I was hiding.
Yeah.
And that freedom in a sense allowed me to become vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to be, and what that means, that's a very powerful thing, I think, for a therapist, because it means that they're able to walk into a space where whatever's going to come is going to come. And they're not going to be thrown by these triggers that eventually will come because they've done the inner work. They've looked at that. But to be able to be impacted and affected by the moment, by someone sitting across from you, is an expression of, again, human beingness that the client oftentimes doesn't trust, but now is seeing. And that can be very healing.
Yeah, I really like that. You're talking about, you know, ways that a early career practitioner, any one of us been in the field, you know, for a while, can be kind of shepherded through this inner work. And I'm going to talk about your programs in just a minute. A couple of questions I typically ask early career practitioners is, what do you fear most and what do you need most? One is about myself, what I fear most and how I see myself in the world and what I've done around that. And what I need most is more relational. So it's within, before, the between. And what might be two questions, just for those listening today that might be practitioners, that in terms of the inner journey, what might be two questions that off the top of your head, you might encourage them just to ask of themselves if they walk away from today's time to kind of stoke even just another round of inner work?
Right. Yeah, I think a really important one is, you know, what is your why for getting into this field? What brought you into this field. Yeah. And if, you know, you say, like many of us, and these are perfectly justifiable, that, you know, you want to help and you want to heal, I would say, define those words, define those terms. What does it mean for you to be aware of that? And there's no judgment here, but I think you have to be aware of those definitions. And it might be you really can't define them. And in which case, you know, you've got some exploration to do, like many of us.
Yeah.
The other one would be, I think, how important it is for you to have the answers, you know, and what is healing? What does it mean to be healing? How would you describe the therapist client relationship? What does that look like to you?
As I hear you say it that way, it's almost like, what is your identity in this?
Yeah.
Is it the one with the answers, or is it the one that can kind of change the power differential that's inherent in the relationship to be more kind of equal and just joining? Almost right. Like there's an identity piece, it sounds like you're saying.
Very much so. You know, all these things that I'm talking about were things where I just completely screwed up. You know, I didn't get it. Yeah. And, you know, it got to a point where I feel like I did get, look, I'm not, and I should have started 40 minutes ago by saying this, by no stretch of the imagination am I a Zen master. You know, I don't have all this stuff dialed in, but
it's part of our humanness.
It's about being willing to not have all the answers and to own my own history. You know, the stuff that, you know, you drag into the room behind you that we all do.
Yeah.
And being able to sit with that and to sit comfortably with that and to own that and to realize that it's not always going to be pretty, but to show up with that, there's a certain trust in that. There's a certain beauty in that. You know, and there's just those things, that willingness, that openness seeds the soil for the healing process.
Really like that. Really like that. You know, you're talking about the why and then the what and the how that come after that. So why did you come into the field, and what and how does helping and fixing and healing look like to you? I love that piece. And the identity that you're saying right here, what is your identity and your role? How do you see yourself from the outside looking in? And is it an equal partnership? Is it kind of a one where there is a power differential and you're supposed to have all the answers? And the idea of our history that we do kind of have on our backpack that we bring into the room as well. And how much of a role does that come out and play possibly, or how much awareness do we have so that it doesn't become an interference to the work that's sitting in front of us that we want to join into? And as I say that, two things. One, I'm aware of our time. We're kind of winding down, but I want to talk about this journey that you're encouraging all of us to take. And I love what you said a moment ago. Maybe kind of I can segue into it with this. As therapists, we want to be able to be free. We want to be free to be human beings and to give ourselves permission to do that and to be able to join with another human being in our humanness and then watching what gets to emerge relationally and in the healing process around that. So what you've done in the Trauma Therapist Project, you guys have created some courses. There's some great ones, folks, that you're listening in. There's the inner work for the new trauma therapist. There's the heart-centered therapist. There's the Trauma Therapist 2.0. In a quick nutshell, Guy, give us a sense of what people would experience going through some of these courses that could build upon what we're talking about here today.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I guess I'll just pick one. I mean, the course on inner work really is about what we're talking about. And it's really looks at, what does it mean to be authentic? How does one cultivate authenticity? How does one cultivate vulnerability? What does it mean to be present? How do you cultivate these things? You know, we talk so much about this. And in this course, I've taken a lot of the interviews I've done. I've done interviews specifically for the course, and we kind of break it down. And these are geared specifically for newer therapists, early stage career therapists who want to learn about trauma and so forth. And so that's what it's about. And that most of the work I do really centers or speaks to people starting out on their trauma-informed journey. So
really good. I appreciate that piece. You know, I'm thinking as you're saying that, we so want to enjoy this work that we're doing. And if we can come in and right size and reframe like you're encouraging us to do, what our role is, who we are in their relationship, what we bring to that therapeutic process. That's where the real joy in this work comes from, doesn't it? It's not about having to do things. It's about having to be with something that we can trust and we can watch unfold. And it is magical at times. It is artful and it's creative and it's spontaneous and it's lovely. It truly is. And it changes people's lives. They need somebody to come in and join them to free them from where they're trapped, to begin to kind of go outside the box and connect all the dots. And so I love this idea that you're encouraging us to take a look at this trauma-based inner journey work. So Guy, it's always great to be with you. Thanks for sharing all you got to give us and appreciate our time today.
All right, Graham. It was a pleasure. It's always a pleasure talking to you, man. I appreciate it. You got me fired up now.
All right. We're going to keep talking at some point. We're going to keep the conversation going for down the road as well. Me too. Thank you.
All right.
And to our listeners, I want to thank you for being with us as well. And we will look forward to seeing you next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.